Welcome back to NELP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Today's host of your host of today's episode, my goodness, Neil and myself, Miles from Include Software, Neil from Vodafone Bench. How's it going, Neil?
That was an intro. That was an intro. How are you doing?
My goodness, I'm good. I'm a little overwhelmed by the presence of our guest.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of stumbling through the intro today.
Well, let me introduce him since he's already talking on the podcast. So our guest today is Roger Phelps. Roger joined Steel Inc. in 2001 and is currently the corporate communications manager. In that position, he is responsible for creating and telling the Steel story through integrated event marketing, sponsorships, associations, and public relations, as well as digital and social media, with the goal of increasing the visibility and affinity for the Steel brand in over 10,000 Steel dealers. He attended the U.S. Naval Academy and served 10 years in the U.S. Navy, attaining the rank of Lieutenant Commander. He has served on the National Association of Landscape Professionals Foundation Board of Directors and currently serves on the National Association of State Park Directors Leadership School Board of Regents. Roger, what did I miss? Anything?
My entire life summarized in 20 seconds.
No. There you go.
The only thing, and maybe we can get to this, the only thing I would add is that my career path between leaving the Navy and joining Steel is anything but what you would call ordinary. And I've had conversations with folks. So if there was ever an example of don't worry about where you are now, it may not be where you end up. That, I guess it would be me. But no, thank you. And I'm really glad to be here with you guys.
Well, we're so glad that you're here. And we're super excited that Steel is helping make this all possible. And of course, all the sponsorships that Steel does for leadership initiatives, the Young Professionals Network. We'll talk all about that. And I think we're excited to learn from you as a guru in marketing, some ways that, you know, our companies can do better. But why don't you give us a little, just sort of short synopsis of your career path first? Because I know a lot of people listening, especially this week with NCLC, are thinking about their career paths or potential career paths.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. And I got to say, I'm so excited about NCLC next week, even though it's virtual. I mean, I've been personally attending for 19 years. And, you know, except for these last 2 years, it's always been in person. And I just absolutely love the opportunity for the personal conversations. But yeah, a lot of people do ask me about my career path. If I could summarize it real quick, I would say this, and that is get in anywhere you can and then exceed expectations. Because when you do that, opportunities will present themselves, guaranteed. So anyway, when I got out of the Navy, I had an opportunity, and I remember my wife confronting me, and she said, you know, you can do what you can do or do what you want to do. And what she meant by that is obviously I was getting offers from defense contractors and that kind of area because of what I had done in the Navy. But I wanted to do something different, and I know it may sound corny, but what I really kind of boiled it down to, my why, was, you know, I wanted to help people and I wanted to make people happy. I know that sounds odd maybe, but That's kind of what was driving me. And she said, well, good, then find something that you can do that would do that. And so, I realized that in the Navy, my collateral duties always seemed to end up being PR, public relations, media relations, and events, you know, special events on the ship, tours, changes of command. I mean, you name it. And I just really had a passion for that. So when I got out of the Navy, I actually ended up taking a 50% pay cut and joining an events company that produced outdoor festivals. And so I went from, you know, shooting missiles to booking bands, which is obviously, you know, a logical career path. But I had a blast. I loved it. I learned so much. I learned about sponsorships and customer service and entertainment contracts and, you know, the whole nine yards. And, within 3 years, an opportunity came from the city of Norfolk, Virginia, where we were based. And the director there had seen my work and said, you know, I've got this position open. To take over the operations, basically all the engineering and all of the custodial and maintenance and so forth for the city of Norfolk civic facilities. So that was seven different buildings, including an ice hockey arena and an opera house, a museum, a theater, a ballpark. So I went from booking bands to driving the Zamboni. You know, again, it was one of these where I learned a bunch more stuff and facilities maintenance, facility operations, and working for government, which is a completely different field. And after that, my old boss from the event company came back and said she was managing this thing called OpSail 2000, which was the tall ship celebration for the millennium. And we had about 150 plus tall ships coming in, sailing ships coming from all over the world, and needed somebody who had a security background, education background, and entertainment background. So she asked me to be her assistant director. And so took that over for a year and a half, managing that. It was awesome. Did the event in Norfolk, Virginia, and then I actually flew up to New York City to assist with the really big celebration there on July 4th in the year 2000 for the big event there. And kind of as that contract was drawing to a close, I'd made a lot of contacts with the local arts festival here in Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia, and they had this military event called a military tattoo. And what that basically is, it's like a 4-day military band concert, entertainment festival, you name it. It's about a 4-hour program and involves 750 different performers, again, from all over the world. So I learned about things like, you know, visitor visas, and again, education and school and so forth. So I took that over. And then one day, the marketing director of the arts festival said that she was dating the vice president of Steel, and that he had mentioned a position that was open. And she said, you know, I thought it would be perfect for you. And I mentioned your name. And what that was to produce the Steel Timber Sports Series. So this is the lumberjack competition that you may have seen on ESPN and CBS. And I'm thinking, wow. So I knew the name Steel. I knew the company. I knew, you know, I had a steel chainsaw. And I was like, wow, this is an amazing opportunity. I didn't even realize their headquarters, U.S. headquarters, was in Virginia. So I went, interviewed, and 2 weeks later had the job. And that... From there, you know, again, this company is amazing and provided me lots of opportunities. So I went from producing the Timber Sports Series, expanded on that and assumed all sponsorships. Then I guess they figured I was doing a pretty decent job with PR for Timber Sports. So they gave me PR for the company. And when the social media world started really taking off, I made a proposal to that the social media program for the company should be in my area. So they gave me that. And then we, you know, just kind of kept on expanding. So that leads me to today, where I handle all of our corporate communications, association partnerships, and so forth. So like I said, it was kind of bouncing around, but I would have to say that all of those experiences gave me insights, relationships, knowledge that have really helped me, I believe, be good at what I'm doing now today.
Yeah, you gave some great advice at the beginning of that. But, you know, also what I heard is you were never afraid to take on a new challenge or learn a new skill if the opportunity presented itself to work with the right people or for the right purpose.
Exactly. Which
has served you well. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and it's interesting you said that, because I was just down at the GROW conference down in New Orleans with Marty Grunder, And, you know, he talked about, and I gave one of the talks there about fundamentals. And, you know, fundamentally, that's what I kind of went down to, is why do I want to do what I do? And so I kind of used that as the bellwether each time these opportunities came up, which is, you know, is this the right group that I want to work with? Does it kind of match up with what I want to do, which is, you know, to help people, you know, to maybe provide some enjoyment, to help the company, to use my talents to the best benefit. And yeah, it might mean making a switch. And in fact, in interviews, I often got that, which is, well, you know, you have some experience here, but technically, you know, our HR department is telling us that you're not a good fit. And so why should we hire you? And, you know, I really boiled down to, look, I know how to manage a budget. I know how to manage people, and I know how to manage a crisis, and I know how to learn, and I learn fast. So, you know, fundamentally, that's what I can bring to the table. And, you know, that definitely served me well. But you're right. I mean, you can't be afraid. And just because it doesn't fit a quote unquote career path, per se, doesn't mean that it didn't help me ultimately in my career path.
So at Steele, what do you see your future being then? Do you have something that you're looking for the next step, or are you kind of waiting for, I mean, I don't know how much you can share, but I'm kind of curious because this is pretty cool career path, but it kind of seems like you're settled at Steele. And they're really providing you some like good entrepreneurial activities.
Yes.
And opportunities that like can like, cause I've known you for a while. So like, but this is great having this conversation. I don't think we've ever had this conversation. So,
yeah.
But you seem to have this appetite, this entrepreneurial appetite, but it seems like Steele's like satisfying that. So,
yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, it's a great point, Miles. Each step of the way, it's an opportunity. I mean, let's take the social media opportunity as an example. I mean, to be completely frank, in 2008, when I first put that program together and the concept, Steele, and I don't just mean Steele Incorporated based in the US, but the parent company, the global company, which is based in Germany. I mean, as folks know, I mean, we're a family-owned business. I mean, there is a Mr. Steele, a couple of Mr. Steeles, as a matter of fact. the family still owns and runs the company. So, you know, anyway, the global company did not have a social media program. I mean, at that point, it was pretty much at the beginning. I mean, yeah, there was Facebook. But for the most part, people were looking at it as a place to post pictures of cats and pictures of their latest meal. You know, and we kept looking at it going, man, you know, one of the strengths of the company was the fact that that the word of mouth reputation that Steele had was phenomenal. So the relationships that were built between the customers and the dealers, and then the dealers and Steele, were super strong. And someone would say, you know, well, what do you use? Or ask the pro that was cutting a tree in front of their house, well, what do you use? Or the landscaper, you know, well, we use Steele. And I mean, early on, we saw the opportunity that social media was basically just word of mouth gone high tech. So I remember putting the whole social media kind of proposal together, and they told me, yeah, it'd be great, but you got to convince Mr. Steele. So every October, the Steele family comes and visits Steele Incorporated. They actually make the rounds of all the subsidiaries around the world. But I mean, with the U.S. being the largest of the entire Steele group, I mean, obviously it's important. So I remember the day that I had to stand up in the boardroom and address Mr. Steele. So I'm explaining social media and Facebook to this very, I mean, impeccably dressed, sharp-eyed 70-year-old German engineer, you know, and he's got these eyes that drill through you, man. I mean, the guy is amazingly sharp. And I got to tell you, I'm pretty good at public speaking and presenting things, but I was nervous as all get out. You know, this is the man. I mean, this is the guy whose name is on the side of the building and on your paycheck. So anyway, you know, I remember explaining it all to him. And the key for me was to explain that the business opportunity, the business benefit, and how we would use it for instance, intelligence, to hear what the customers were saying. And, you know, I remember my final point was, you know, the conversation about steel is already happening. I mean, we've seen that in our social media listening. So the question really was, did we want to be part of that conversation or not? And I remember he asked me one question. And he just said, will you respond to every negative comment? And I remember telling him, no, we won't. And I remember there was like this collective gasp, you know, everyone's like, oh, Phelps is toast. And Mr. Steel said, why not? And I said, because we have an incredibly loyal fan base and knowledgeable fan base. And so my opinion is that unless it's really something that's damaging to the Steel brand or advocates for something unsafe, we would not respond because our fans will do it for us. And he's like, good. Okay, do it. I mean, that was it. I mean, that the guy, I mean, again, I mean, that's why this company for 90 plus years has been so successful, is because the family is incredibly sharp and not afraid to embrace change. So yeah, there it was. So as far as what's next for me, I mean, honestly, what we're looking at now is how do we fully integrate our customer care program? How do we take social listening and customer service inbound emails and phone calls and all of that? And how do we create a comprehensive system that can monitor, can respond, can track, you know, customer needs and customer care? And really that's our next kind of frontier right now, at least in my area. And then just continue to build out on the relationships like the one we have with NALT. And, you know, that's why I'm so excited about this YPN network and the Young Professional Network is, again, you know, we are always interested in investing in the future of our partners and the industries that we're part of.
I love the way that you present the social media opportunity, because so many landscapers, so many people listening to this are probably thinking, how can we leverage social media better? And you're, you know, it becomes an objective. It becomes an advertising path, right?
Absolutely.
It becomes a competition for followers, or a way to control the narrative. And your approach is really refreshing, or at least back then what your approach was, being, you know, we already have a product that's worth talking about. We're going to help people talk about it more efficiently in an online format.
Yes.
Obviously, you have an 80-year head start over a lot of companies into the product being worth talking about. But I see so many companies that, you know, go create a better customer experience and the social media will work the way you want it to, right? Instead of just to pay for ad revenue.
You know, it's so important. You know, it's really interesting that you said that, because, I mean, you know, when we talk about business, I mean, I think most people agree that, and I think Marty always likes to say this too, Marty Grunder, and, you know, people buy from people and not necessarily a company. And so that relationship building is so important. And, you know, the loyalty that gets built up when you buy a relationship. Well, how do you buy a relationship? I mean, I remember I gave a presentation on social media content marketing. And, you know, it may sound crass, but, you know, you don't start a conversation by saying, you know, hi, my name is Roger, buy my product. I mean, you know, that's kind of like walking into a car showroom. And the guy first comes up and, you know, you're like, oh gosh, you know, I don't even know what car I want. I don't need to deal with this guy. But if the guy tries to build a relationship, listen to you, leaves you, you know, kind of creates that relationship, all of a sudden, and, you know, this is interesting now. And then if they can provide you valuable information to help you with your decision process. You know, I remember early on, I read a great book. It's by Jay Baer, and it's called Utility, Y-O-U-T-I-L-T-Y, Utility. And Jay at the time, I mean, he's a major dude now, but I mean, at the time, he was running a pool business, I believe. And on his website, he was posting all of this information on tips and how to maintain your pool. And everyone said, you're crazy. You know, why are you giving all that information away? And that's the service you provide. And his point was, no, you know, when people have a question now about how to maintain their pool, they're going to come to my website. And after trying to maintain their pool for a while, they're going to figure out that it's hard and that they really don't want to deal with it. So they're going to end up coming back to me as the resource to sign up for their services. And he was right. You know, so he became a trusted partner of information, not just about the product, but about tips and how to and general information and, you know, how to get the most out of your pool party or whatever. So, you know, for me, that was one of those fundamental books where it was kind of an aha that I really felt that as a company, I mean, kind of the first words out of our mouth should be, how can we help? And again, that kind of goes back to the fundamentals of the company. I mean, when Andreas Steele, who invented the world's first electric chainsaw, first invented that chainsaw, it's because he went out into the forest and saw guys using axes and handsaws and said, man, there's got to be a better way. And his fundamental premise for the company was to find ways to make it easier and better for people to work in and with nature. And so again, that's in a short form, that's, hey, we're here to help. So I think that's what a lot of folks miss when they're quote unquote marketing. It's kind of this push and not enough effort to make a relationship. And to your point, social media is great for that.
So I'm curious, 100 years later, what is Steele doing to help people work better and more efficiently in nature? We know that we've seen a lot of battery technology come out, obviously iterative designs of products. Investing in the future and looking ahead, Roger, what can you tell us about products we should be excited about?
Well, you know, I had a great conversation with Chase Mullen down in New Orleans. He was our host landscaper. And, you know, talk about guys who started with gas equipment and so forth. And he was telling me how he had landed a couple of hospital jobs, primarily because he could show that he would be maintaining the property in and around the hospitals with battery equipment. So, you know, no exhaust emissions, low noise, et cetera. And as he said, that was his market differentiator against his competitors. So there's a perfect example. You know, another example that I had is, as you read in my bio, I work a lot with the state parks and the state park directors, and they rely heavily on seasonal labor. Well, you know, anybody who has worked with two cycle engines equipment knows that that's can be challenging, right? You mess up the fuel mix and you're toast. You run straight gas through your engine and that's a new carburetor. And that happens when you got seasonal, you don't have the chance to train. So what they found is that with battery equipment, it's put the battery in, show them where the button is to tell them what the charge remaining is, to show them where the quote unquote on button is, and tell them to go do their work. And so there you go. I mean, so what we're seeing is, you know, on the gas side to reduce emissions, reduce noise, because frankly, that is the major pressure that we're seeing across the country. I mean, landscapers are facing some serious issues there with two cycle engine bans, blower bans. I mean, governments and communities around the country are doing that. So if we can make the gas equipment lower noise and lower emission, more fuel efficient, we're also looking at, and battery technology obviously is, in our opinion, the real future, because of the ease of use, less moving parts, less maintenance required, almost no maintenance, low noise, zero exhaust emissions for all those reasons. And battery technology continues to improve. So, you know, 10 years ago, I could not have honestly told you that battery equipment was comparable or a good investment with absolute confidence. I can tell you now that with the exception of a few uses, you know, battery is getting up there. It's comparable now. And then, of course, you know, I think, Miles, you and I were talking about this. You know, more and more landscapers are using software and they're using technologies to improve their efficiency and effectiveness of the workforce and planning work and setting up maintenance schedules and whatever else. So how can we work with our equipment and make that easier to dovetail and socket into these programs so that you can really have an effective fleet management program and be alerted where your equipment is or when the maintenance is required or that it's due. So, you know, in those areas, we're certainly working to improve not just the technology of the equipment, but the ability of it to connect and talk, quote unquote, with those types of programs.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting to see what the potential is, especially when you move to a battery powered kind of platform, because it makes any electronic, including software integration, way easier because it's all powered by the same thing, right? Electric. So it's really cool. I'm excited for the future to see what this, like what suppliers like you put out. I'm sure that it's cool to see internally too. There's probably departments in steel that didn't exist probably 10, 20 years ago that they probably represent more of a tech company than like a traditional engineering company in some aspects, probably, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've got whole divisions now that didn't exist before. So, I mean, you know, that's the secret. I mean, if you look at any company that's been around 100 plus years, I mean, you know, we're closing in on our 100th anniversary. That's pretty considerable. And to say that, you know, it's still family owned, we're now, what, the third generation is managing the company and the fourth and fifth generation are already integrated. I mean, that's exceptional, but you don't do that by being complacent. You know, I mean, good Lord, we can go through a whole laundry list of brand names that are gone because they refuse to change. They refuse to embrace the changing environment, the changing customer, the changing technology. And I mean, I don't think we as an industry or as individuals should allow technology to drive who we are as a company, but we certainly should take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. As long as it fits our culture and, you know, our foundational vision and mission as a company.
Well, it's a tool, right? It's like exactly. Anything else.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You don't let the tools drive the decision, because otherwise then you're in big trouble.
No. But at the same time, I mean, let's take robotic mowers. Great example. In my opinion, I think it is a phenomenal tool. And, you know, I think we as an industry are still trying to wrap our heads around it. But I have already seen some uses of it that by both professionals as well as homeowners, where, you know, it's an amazing opportunity. But for instance, I was working with Phil Allen out at BYU, and they did a great paper on the fact that landscape design is not currently up to speed and supportive of robotic mowing. You know, when you plop a little rock garden in the middle of the lawn, I mean, you've just created some real issues. Or if you're border or, you know, tiered grass, well, it looks really pretty, but heck, I mean, good grief, it's challenging for the current maintenance. You know, instead of being able to just mow, now you got to lift your mower, you got to go up on the terrace, you got to take out your trimmer, because it's this little postage stamp of grass that's really pretty on a 3D design, but not necessarily maintenance friendly. So, you know, you're seeing an industry now wrestling with the technology and not necessarily changing wholesale, but adapting and getting better at it to say, wow, you know, how can we design a landscape that is more supportive or friendly to a robotic mower for all the right reasons? because if you no longer have to drive, you know, a 3500 version Ram truck or whatever, or a Ford 350 or whatever, and a huge trailer for your zero turns, but instead you could be driving an F-150 with the smaller crew, because you installed a robotic mower and then all you need is your crew to go ahead and do some trimming. I mean, there's some real advantages there. We were at a regional airport. You know, they have FOD issues, foreign object damage, and personnel issues and all this other stuff. Well, you know, plop a robotic mower in there, and all of a sudden, because it's continuously operating and only trimming just a little bit off, you know, those multi-million dollar planes that are being housed out there aren't at risk of having a rock thrown into them. And the grass is taken care of, and they're extremely happy, and their overall maintenance costs went down. So anyway, just an example of what we were talking about.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like talking about the future. So that's cool that Steel's going down that road. So that's tools and tech, but people are also, you know, people is probably the biggest issue. We were talking about that a little bit before, right? But like everyone's looking for good people, especially in our industry, you know.
Wow.
It seems like you guys are, I mean, your partnership with us is really cool with the Young Professionals Network. What's the reason behind the support for just the people, right? So you're very active in NCLC, the Young Professionals Network, and I mean, just overall, you're very active. So like, what's the driving force behind that?
You know, it's really interesting. One of the initial statements made by Andreas early on when he was first starting the company, and one of the first decisions he made was to sell it only through a servicing retailer dealer, because as he said, you know, a piece of equipment is only as good as the service behind it. Well, obviously, the service is only as good as the technician, and the technician is only as good as the training. So, you know, that's this idea of training and how important training was, and information there, and building up the individuals that are going to be servicing the equipment. And for me personally, you know, I in the Navy found how critical training was to what we did. You know, it's kind of like muscle memory. You're only as good as you've been trained. And so this idea of developing individuals through training, developing your future leaders, developing, you know, your workforce is really kind of ingrained in who we are as a company. And I have to say, me personally. So when I started with the company at Steel, I was really amazed at how thorough and how deep the training elements went. For even us at Steel, I mean, the employment, we have an apprentice program. It's something based on Germany, but basically a forklift driver who shows interest and aptitude can go through an apprentice training program that will get them a degree, as well as on the job training. And we have several senior managers now that started either as a line worker or as a forklift driver. Mm-hmm. I mean, because of that. So, but what do you get out of that? You know, you get someone who has a thorough knowledge of the culture of the company and every facet from the top down. And they actually are a better manager. So, you know, I remember when I first started, I took over our sponsorship programs and our association memberships. I mean, it was really important to me that we invest in the future of that industry, because if you don't do that, then the industry doesn't have a future. And if the industry doesn't have a future, we as a company selling equipment to the industry don't have a future. So, you know, I remember we got started with the FFA, we got started with a couple other high school type groups. Almost immediately, I was introduced to the NALP and the collegiate landscape competition. And I'm thinking, that's cool. You know, we can connect the landscape competitions at the FFA level, the high school level, with the college levels, you know, show young people coming out of high school that there were real opportunities and colleges and degrees in landscaping and horticulture and design and so forth. And then connecting the collegiate with the pro or the profession. I mean, when you think about the career fair, I mean, that to me, I get jazzed. Like walking through the career fair and seeing hundreds of landscape companies, you know, with jobs, you know, and young people lining up to get interviews and internships and jobs and job offers, you know. And I remember the one anecdote that I love telling, because people go, landscaping, you know, why do I want to get involved in landscaping? And I just remember one year, a young lady that I knew from the FFA, who actually ended up going to K-State, and then she had just stepped out of the career fair. And I asked her, because I remember seeing her at the FFA. I said, well, how'd it go? And she was just laughing. She had 7 job offers. And I think one of them started at 56K. And I mean, okay, how many careers were, and I'm not saying that's, you know, everybody's experience, but, you know, when it comes to being able to leave college, do something you love doing, working in the outdoors or whatever, with really good starting salaries and so forth, and the ability to build a long-term career, because I now, with 20 years experience, you know, folks that I met first starting their business are now running major companies. It's awesome. And so for us, it's a real passion to be able to see, and I really applaud the NALP for its investment in the collegiate level, the young professionals, the training programs, the certification programs. I mean, if you want to get ahead in this industry, take advantage of every single one of those, because that's going to set you up.
Yeah, I think that's all spot on. We're super appreciative, because we're trying to do the same thing, right? Educate, yeah, and invest in the future. And, you know, one thing that I see company after company miss the boat on is really leveraging manufacturer and dealer support of their products. And I bet a lot of our listeners don't even know about the instructor education program that you guys offer. You want to talk a little bit about how you offer dealer support to professional companies through programs like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think it's on our, it's on our website, but we have training specialists that go across the entire country. I mean, one of the things that I think is unique to Steel is that we're 2-step distribution. So I work for Steel Incorporated. We're the U.S. headquarters, but we're also a manufacturing facility. So, you know, as I'm very proud of, we're building steel equipment in Virginia Beach. And I think right now about 80% of the equipment that's available in the U.S. is actually built here. So we're very proud of that. We export around the country. But anyway, the point is we build the equipment. We then sell to 11 of our branches and distributors around the country. And they, in turn, will then sell it and maintain the relationship with the roughly a little over 10,000 steel dealers that are around the country. But each of those 11 distributors has what's called a training specialist, and they interact with the dealers, but they're also available to go out to a company and provide maintenance and operation training for our equipment. So, you know, that is a terrific asset that, as you said, I don't think a lot of people are aware of. I think it's the contact us section of our website on steelusa.com. There's a section for professional training, and you can just find the training specialist that's in your area and just log on and set something up. Honestly, I don't think there's a cost, but if there is, it's minimal. But because again, we're here to help. And we find that when people are confident and comfortable using our equipment, I mean, their experience is going to be, you know, much better, and the loyalty with our brand goes up as well. I will say that for any instructors, any collegiate instructors, professors or that are listening, you know, we also have this, what we call the iCademy program. It's an award-winning online program. it was initially designed to train the service technicians at our dealers, but it's also available as part of a program that's available for VOTEC schools, high schools, colleges, anybody who's interested in an engine type program can log on there. So that's, and again, there's no cost to it. So if anybody listening is in that area, I'd highly recommend they take advantage of that asset.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about the labor issue that we're all facing and the challenge of hiring people who don't have experience, what's better than having, you know, one of 11, you know, professional instructors come out and teach your people how to use the equipment you already have?
Yeah. And use it properly. I mean, because it's really interesting when people, I mean, I won't say all of the gripes are, you know, kind of user oriented, because that's not true. I mean, I don't care how good your manufacturing process is, let's face it, you know, we're going to have issues. And again, that's why we go through the servicing dealer or the dealers to provide service, because, you know, hey, everything at some point in time needs repair or maintenance. I don't care what it is. But anyway, the point though is that if everybody fully understands all the features, all the benefits, the proper use, you know, basic maintenance tips that will help extend the life of the equipment or the performance of the equipment. I mean, I can't tell you the number of guys, for instance, even on the battery equipment, we have pro level battery equipment, and there's a little mesh screen that prevents debris from kind of collecting in and around the motor, which then it creates greater heat, which creates greater wear. But something as simple as, hey, at the end of the day, just brush that screen off to make sure the airflow keeps going. You know, it's a simple little thing, but if you don't do it, people go, wow, you know, boy, you know, that really overheated and stopped working. Well, yeah, you could have prevented it with a simple step, you know, just basic maintenance and keeping things clean and available. So anyway, stuff like that. But you're exactly right. If we can help that, then by all means, we want to do it.
So it's funny that you say, it's interesting that you say that, because I'm picking up common threads here, and it's just been, I don't know what it is, but it's been a very consistent thing over the past couple of weeks. And education seems like to be this huge common theme, right? Like no matter who we are, like any landscaping business, what you're saying here really comes down to education of either your people, your employees, or your clients, right?
Yep.
And you said that in so many different ways.
So important.
Yeah. So it's just interesting to see, like, you know, even though, you know, you're working for Steel, which is not like a landscaping company, right? Or you're a supplier, but you're still going through the same issues. And there's a lot to learn there. It's pretty cool. Then I just want to say, Roger, I really admire your storytelling skills. I think that this is something that you did not say that I would need to call out directly, because I think, Roger, you're probably very successful in your career because you're a very, very good storyteller. You know, you can tell the story in a very concise way, but in a way that really engages people, and the energy level matches that storytelling. So it's very, you know, people like that a lot. And I think it really makes you an effective communicator as well. So I think that that's a skill. I'm not saying that you just grew that skill, right? You probably nurtured and grew, like,
you really worked hard
on that. But
Miles, I mean, thank you. First of all, thank you. And I appreciate that. I really do, because it is something that's very important to me. I love storytelling. I mean, I'm a geek. I go to the International Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee every year that I
really?
Can. And I listen to the world's best storytellers. And
that's so cool.
Oh my God. I tell you what, I'm not kidding you. You want to sit there and spend, you know, 4 hours in a tent listening to people telling stories, and you don't even know the time went by. But the skills there are really important. And I have studied it, and I have tried, because I don't know of any more powerful communication vehicle than a story. And I, you know, again, I don't mean once upon a time, but I, you know, what are the core elements of a story? I mean, you've got, you've got an underlying theme or message. I mean, whether it's biblical parables or Aesop's fables or whatever, there's always, there's a message. You know, what do you, at the end of the story, what do you want people walking away thinking? So it starts with, you know, what do you want people to do? And then it's like, who am I? And what do we do? And how do we do it? But most importantly, why do we do it? So for instance, when I always challenge my PR team that when we're making statements, it's always not just what, but it's why plus what. And I think when you think about marketing and trying to convey, for instance, a landscape business, you know, it's not just, let's face it, everybody knows what they do, right? I mean, we cut grass, we trim hedges, we prune trees, whatever, okay? The better companies know how they do it. We do it with quality tools. We do it with quality processes. We, you know, we do it with efficient processes or programs. But honestly, I think only the best companies know why they do. And that becomes a real driving force. And what I just described to you is basically Simon Sinek's power of why.
You're a Simon fan, aren't you?
Oh, big time. Big time. Big time. Everybody on a professional and personal level, in my opinion, needs to log on and go to YouTube and find the presentation on the power of why. Because that to me is the fundamental element of storytelling. So it's not just, hey, we're here to cut your lawn. You know, what's the why behind it? You know, we're here to create that environment that you can have your daughter's wedding in the back. You know, we're here where you can roll around and play soccer with your kids, or you can enjoy the evening sunset or the sound of the birds or a vegetable. I mean, you know, again, it's the why behind it. So you got me off on a favorite topic, so I'm sorry.
No, that's what this is about. Yeah, no.
So, so this is a 2-hour podcast, right?
yeah, I know. But I know I brought that up at the end, but I just think I just clicked for me just now, just like, why, you know, this career path worked for you is because you're able to tell a story. And yeah. And Neil actually has had some really good input on that too, right? Like, so Neil is a big sales guy, and right. So like on previous podcasts, we've gone over like how you've literally, Neil, right? You've memorized phrases, or you've like, and it sounds kind of silly, but you've really been able to hone in on your messaging to be very clear, right?
Yeah. I don't think I'm a good natural storyteller. But I have learned how to script things and create presentations. And I've worked, I mentioned before, I hired a speech pathologist to coach me on how to articulate words and the right cadence to use for different situations. And similar to what you're saying, Roger, consider what the takeaway for the audience is. And you know, when I do keynote presentations at conferences, it's, I can actually draw an emotional journey of ups and downs that I've pre-planned for the audience to feel at different times through that narrative. So for me, it's super unnatural, but I've learned the process to do it effectively when I need to.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, and I admire you for it, because, you know, we all recognize that we have areas that we're not that great on, but that's no excuse not to get better at it. And frankly, communication, I can't think of anything more important than communication, because frankly, as I always say, it's a little joke I tell my team, we can, you know, it's like throwing a party. You can put together the greatest party in the world, but if you don't send invitations, nobody shows up. And marketing and communications is all about getting that invitation out there in a way that people go, wow, yeah, I want to go to that party. And yeah. So, Neil, I admire you for doing that. That's exactly the kind of things that we all, I mean, I take classes. I go online. I try to rehearse. Miles, you've been very flattering. I got to tell you, though, what I still get a gut you know, it's butterflies in my stomach, and public speaking is not my favorite thing to do, believe it or not.
Just to help you out, though, Simon Sinek, again, I'm a huge Simon fan, so I like watch and read everything that he does. But he had a really good point where he's like, you know, all these really successful people who are really good public speakers, when I talk to them in his Simon Sinek way, right? It's very thoughtful. He said that they took that butterfly feeling and told themselves that they're excited and they weren't nervous, right? They weren't nervous, but rather they're excited, which changes your perception. So, you're just a very excitable guy.
I do get emotional. but imagine that though. I mean, you know, for instance, when you're looking at your sales force, you know, you want someone like Neil. You want someone who maybe takes that nervous energy and channels it and turns it into passion and works on it. And, you know, but again, it's got to be real. I mean, you know, at the core of it, you've got to have a real reason that you believe in, because frankly, you know, you don't believe in what you're saying, that'll come across no matter how good of a speaker you are. You know, we're back to the, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to insult car salesmen, but you know, we all know the type, let's put it that way, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
It can never be disingenuous, but you can absolutely choose how to present yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Authentically. And you know, what changed it for me was when I read in Harvard Business Review that the number one skill for professional growth and career advancement was communication. It was like, okay, this is worth investing in. And at the beginning of our time, Roger, you said, you know, all you have to do is find a place and then exceed expectations.
Right.
Expectations are low, man. Like, being better than average is not hard. You know, every single person who's listening to this podcast is falling in that camp of better than average because they're actively doing something to improve themselves, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The fact that they're listening to this podcast, in my opinion, already puts them ahead of the pack.
You have to do something about it too. I'm in the camp of execution. I mean, this is all pie in the sky, but if you like, I could listen to all the podcasts, I'm not doing anything about it, then, you know.
Well, exactly. But you're right. And Miles, you're spot on. I mean, I can read all the self-help books I want. You know, I will throw out one last thing, and that is, you know, it doesn't really apply here on podcast, and that's why you have to kind of work on things like voice inflections to create emotion. But I will tell you that, you know, I've taken body language courses because research shows that 80% of conversations are visual, and that when there's a visual disconnect between what you're saying and the cues that go along with it, the body language cues, people don't trust you. So, I mean, there's all sorts of books and courses out there, but you got to work on that too. I mean, it's basically your entire presentation, from how you stand to how you dress to how you speak. I mean, it doesn't have to be picture perfect. You don't need to be some polished gem, but yeah, keep working on it.
Pretty cool.
All good stuff, man. Could definitely go 2 hours.
Yeah, no, for sure.
let's schedule a time. We'll come back and do it again, and we'll pick another topic, because I really enjoy talking to you guys, and I admire the podcast, and you've done a great job with your guests, and I gotta say, we're just proud to be part of it. And frankly, the reason we're sponsoring all this is because of the service that you all provide, and I hope the folks listening appreciate the effort that goes into these things. But kudos to you, Miles. Neil, thank you.
Thank you, Roger. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah. We're going to wrap into Rose and Thorn. So real quick, I guess I'll kick it off. Roger, are you familiar with Rose and Thorn? You are, right?
I've heard it on one other podcast. I thought it was a really cool concept. I love it, man. I'm looking forward to this one.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I just realized I assumed there. I should have done that. But anyway, so cool. Rose and Thorn. So good things for me. I'm back in DC. It's 70 degrees out. It's beautiful. So it's pretty cool to see. Spring is coming. I'm very happy for that. Not many thorns right now, to be honest, which is cool. So yeah, that's it for me.
Well, I am also loving the weather. I've been watching spring training baseball like it's my job.
Right.
which is a new phenomenon. Normally it's like, just go for the normal season, but I'm still going through withdrawals from last year. So it's filling the need, which is great. And thorns, not so much. Stuff starting to open back up. Starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel here in terms of getting back to normal.
Yeah, no, I'm getting pretty excited about that. What about you, Roger?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's pretty personal, but a thorn is about a week and a half ago, the retina in my left eye tore. So I had to go through laser eye surgery, which I highly recommend people avoid. It's one of the most painful things I've ever undergone. But the rose out of all of that is apparently the surgery is taking. I've got another 5 days of not being able to read anything or drive or anything. And the rose out of all this is it looks like the prognosis is totally positive. They saved the vision. And frankly, I've got an amazing team at work that has probably heard from me on the phone more than they've ever heard. And they're reading emails and stuff to me. And I've got an amazing wife who reads emails to me during the day so that I can call and follow up. So no complaints on my end, man. Everything is looking pretty rosy, so to speak. And I'm looking forward, but I am looking forward to getting back to work. I don't like sitting around too much.
Yeah. But yeah, you should listen to our work-life balance podcast. I know. Just plugging it. Just saying.
It's a good one. I will.
No, that's good. I'm glad you're healthy, Roger. I think that's the thing. Like that surgery is taken. That's good news.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. That's also another topic I could talk about: accessibility in tech and using technology. You know, when you have that kind of stuff, you don't realize how important it is until you actually need it. So.
Oh man, that is a good topic.
Spot on. I really do.
Yeah.
Proper use of technology. I love it.
Yeah, especially designing things or like building things for people who aren't like your standard case, right? I think that's like
our accessibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huge.
And our industry uses so much green too, which is just not good, right? Like we definitely can talk about.
Oh yeah, color blindness and stuff. Yes. Yeah. 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 Anyways, we're gonna tangent. Roger, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Roger.
It's been awesome. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, and I wish you guys all success.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we appreciate the partnership too. It's really exciting. So it's also really exciting to have an engaging lead on it too, you know. So it's not every day that you get a sponsor that comes along who's like really passionate about sharing about their career, about their story. So it's, I don't know, it just really gets me going. So
good.
Makes me happy.
Good.
So yeah, thanks again. And also a big thank you to our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe or leave a review. Or do both. Share with your coworkers, friends, family, and so take care, everyone. We'll talk to you later.
See ya.